We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is episode number 99. Scott, we teased it back in spring training. Would Aaron Judge be in the big leagues by the time we reached episode 99? In fact, he was, so we got to dedicate it to the big guy in right field.
Yeah, and thankfully he kept the same number. We were all wondering if 99 was going to be the number he was going to wear in the Bronx, and he did. So definitely thankful for that. Hopefully the dude can come back, start swinging the bat a little better, and able to hit that curveball. That's a big thing, because 99 might go down in history as a number you want to forget if he doesn't. So hopefully Aaron Judge is the guy that we want him to be.
Is Ricky Wildthing Vaughn the most famous number 99 in baseball ever, even though he's a fictitious character?
Probably, just because there aren't very many of them. I mean, it just not many people wear 99.
That's why it
so
was
yeah,
perfect.
I'd have to say that.
I think the fact that Judge was wearing 99 in the minors got me even more excited for him. And the fact that he kept it, like you just said, is huge. So, Scott, you have had quite the eventful weekend. Just a little behind the scenes for you guys listening. Scott, who lives down in Virginia Beach, got hit by that hurricane. What was it, Hurricane Matthew? Hurricane Michael? I don't even know what the name of it was.
It was Matthew, and it wasn't even supposed to come through here. It was supposed to stop and turn, and it didn't. It just kept climbing up the coast and climbing and climbing. And, it nailed us. We had like 90-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, the big cat ones that were hitting like South Carolina and North Carolina, but it did hit us. And, it was crazy. So I was out without power for like 2.5 days and just got it back like an hour ago, which is perfect timing for episode 99.
Yeah,
somebody wanted me to do a podcast.
We weren't sure. For a second, I thought I was going to have to record by myself because it was getting late in the day. We didn't know if you were going to have power or not, so we couldn't secure someone else to do the podcast. And I was thinking for a second I might just have to ramble for an hour by myself. I think that would have gotten pretty weird.
Yeah, talking to yourself is a glass case of emotion. I don't know what you would have done. Who would you have argued with? You complained to yourself?
I think I would have just bitched about Masahiro Tanaka for 45 minutes straight, and no one would have told me to shut up.
Yeah, so, that would have been. Luckily, it worked out. Nobody has to deal with that.
Everyone who's listening is like, thank God Scott's power came back.
They're even. I don't know if you've read some of the reviews lately on iTunes, but the whole Tanaka conversation that you bring up constantly is now in the being complained about in the reviews.
No way.
It was a 5-star review, so the guy was very nice. I appreciate it.
When was this? A very recent.
Yeah,
review?
It was pretty recent. I saw it the other day.
I got to go check it out because I have not read those in at least a month, but that's pretty funny. I think I am putting the Tanaka thing to bed. I got into it again with some people on Twitter when Bumgarner shut down the Mets last week. And I know you hate it. You said before, I do not want to get into the whole Bumgarner Trace thing. I would just quickly mention that Bumgarner's a freak. And watching what he was able to do, it's like you knew he was going to be good, but then he goes out there and doesn't even let you touch the Giants bullpen, which is horrible. The guy's on a whole other level.
No, he is. He is a freak. That's exactly. I mean, the guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a truly special guy, and the truly special guys like that turn on just a different level when the postseason comes. And I mean, he's crazy how good he is and how durable and how much he fights for it. And I mean, you know, Bochy he couldn't even talk to him in the game, let alone approach him about taking him out. I mean, it was a zero chance.
And
then when they got the lead, he ran out there to make sure that because he was getting pinch hit for. But he ran out there to make sure that he wasn't announced. The dude's a competitor, and you got to appreciate that.
Yeah, the wild card games were pretty interesting. I know. So I heard it. So the last couple years with this whole one-game wildcard playoff, people bitch and moan that the whole season, 162 games, comes down to this one day for these teams, and it's unfair. And then if you run into a pitcher like Arrieta last year or Bumgarner this year, you have no shot. And to that I say, well, I mean, those are wildcard teams. Those aren't division winner teams. I think it's awesome that the whole setup now rewards the division winner. You get to automatically advance to the longer series, and it's a crapshoot for those wildcard teams. They weren't good enough to win their divisions, so hey, let it come down to a one game playoff. I think there's nothing better than a baseball game seven, and that's essentially what we have now to kick off the playoffs every year. That's freaking awesome.
The only thing I'll say about that is, like, people complain about it, which I don't really understand the complaint, because what about the guy that didn't make it, that was fighting to the last day and had a one game to win or not win, and they didn't make it? I mean, it's just kind of how it works out sometimes. So that's why I think it's such a weird area, a gray area, if you're calling it a playoff game, because it's one game. So but the thing I'll say is that when you play that game, and you have to throw everybody and everybody to play that one game and to play a game seven, because in game sevens, everybody's available, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with this type of thing. And then the winner, if it's a close game, that wild card's a close game, the winner has to throw everybody in the kitchen sink to win the game if it's close. And then they roll right into a five-game series, completely depleted. That's where I find it a bit of a disservice to the team that even wins that game.
No, because they that's the whole point of it, is to not reward the wild card team. Back when the wild card started in 1995 through whatever it was, 2011, 2012, when I don't even know how long this one game has been going for. I think 3 years. The wild card team had no disadvantage. I mean, they didn't have home field advantage, which is what? 2% less of an advantage, like 48% to 52% if you start a series on the road. Okay, yeah, but in the certain teams. But generally speaking, they automatically advance. I mean, there was really no – you'd see teams – shut it down because they knew they had the wild card locked up. They wouldn't even go for a division because there was really no penalty for it. Now yeah, there's a huge penalty.
But the thing, I understand that. But the thing is the penalty is you have to play that one game. Then they have another penalty because they have are depleted going into a five game series. It would be a different story to me if it was a seven game series. Because right. But because it's a short series also, and you're already coming in there depleted with, you know, who knows? I mean, if you look at what some of these teams, what happens is they throw everybody, and then, you know, who's available the next time, or they have to throw their ace on that day, then that guy's not able to pitch for another, you know, 4 days, and they might be down 2-0. I mean, we're seeing what's going down with Boston and how Texas was down. I mean, granted, their guys got hit, but I'm just saying, when you're down 2-0 in a five-game series, that's a huge, huge hole.
Yeah, so I think your point about the seven-game series versus the five-game series is legit. I would be fine if they moved the division round to a seven-game series. I think the fact that the baseball playoffs move quickly no matter what, because they play every day with a couple off days for travel. It's not like NBA or NHL where they take 2, sometimes 3 days off in between games. It goes on for 2.5 months. It's ridiculous. The playoffs are over by the end of October, and it's great. So I don't think adding 2 extra games to the division series would really make that much of a difference. You are absolutely right. A five-game series, it's like by the time you realize it and you're already down maybe 2-0, like pretty much all these teams were, you're kind of screwed at that point. And it really does, you're right, put the wildcard team in a disadvantage that way, because Bumgarner couldn't pitch until game 3, and he's their best pitcher. So I understand
exactly
that. I would be fine if they moved it to a 7-game series, but people saying they should move the wild card game to a 3-game series, I completely disagree with.
Yeah, I don't mind the one game. I mean, even it affected us in an adverse way, obviously, last year.
They were gonna lose no matter what.
But the thing is, I know, but I'm saying that I'm not just talking about this. I mean, it's our own team involved with it as well. I'm fine with the one game for the play-in to get there. But yeah, I agree. It should absolutely be a 7-game. I mean, if you have a legit series in the playoffs, it should be 7 games.
Yeah, and one thing I do want to mention still from those wildcard games, you and I recorded last Monday. And then that AL wildcard game was on Tuesday night. That was an epic game. But Buck Showalter not using Britain is just inexcusable. I don't know how you can have, like you just said, a kitchen sink game where everyone is available. And Britain, who is in line for like Cy Young potentially, and he didn't even get in that game. It's insane. I mean, imagine if Joe Girardi in a one-game playoff left Andrew Miller if he was still on the team, or left Dylan Betances on the bench, or if Joe Torre left Mariano Rivera on the bench. We would be livid.
So there's two areas where Britain absolutely should have been in the game. You know, the first one being You just go with him if it's a tie game, because there's so many arguments. People coming in, well, why wasn't he starting the 10th, or why wasn't he starting the 9th? Well, if he's not starting the 9th, then when is he starting? Because at that point, like, you know, you're bringing your guy in, you're bringing your guy in without a lead, because there can't be a lead because you're away. So it's a strange situation. I understand that. So you got to bring him in at some point. And why is the 9th different from the 10th at that point? You know what I mean? Like, it's not much different. But the big point, the big spot where he absolutely comes in, is that when Ubaldo Jimenez, let me say that again, Ubaldo Jimenez, who is horrible. You know, apparently he was doing very well at the end of the year. He wasn't on my radar, so I didn't notice. But you got a guy who, in Britain, who, like you were talking about, a Cy Young candidate. This is a guy that was like, you know, he's the greatest pitcher in baseball right now. And he's a ground ball pitcher, and you need a double play. Why are you not bringing in your guy? You're rolling the season on Ubaldo Jimenez, where you have a ground ball pitcher, Cy Young candidate, waiting and ready to throw. Makes no sense.
The fact that Ubaldo Jimenez pitched before Britain is fireable in my mind. That's like if Ivan Nova was still on the Yankees and he pitched in a game before Dellin Betances, it would, in a game 7, it would be inexcusable. You got to fire a manager for that. And if Buck Showalter does get fired, looks like the Orioles will probably win the World Series in the next 3 years, because everywhere he goes and gets fired, that team wins the World Series.
Yeah, I don't see him getting fired. I mean, that dude has a stranglehold on that job in Baltimore. But
it's a huge gaffe. It's a huge gaffe. I have a buddy who's an Orioles fan, and he was livid. He was down in Baltimore. The whole bar he said that he was at was. It wasn't even like anger. It was just confusion.
Confusion. Like why is this not happening?
Yeah. Like, you thought for a second, like everyone thought, that maybe Britain's hurt. And then, okay, your guy's hurt. But he wasn't hurt. And right after the game, Britain said, no, I was fine. I was ready to go in. He warmed up 3 times. So confusion is almost like the worst as a fan. It's like, why isn't this happening? You've moved past anger and you're just confused why your manager is acting stupid.
It turns into anger later. Don't worry.
Oh, right. But in a one-game playoff, you're just... You just are at a loss for words. So
yeah, dumbfounded.
And the Blue Jays are now having to ban cans of beer from their stadium because fans are throwing stuff on the field. This is 2 years in a row now. They get into the playoffs. They hadn't been there in 20 years, and then they get rowdy, can't handle their liquor, start throwing stuff at players.
Yeah, I remember my first beer. these guys are out of control. I mean, they don't know how to be fans, I guess. They haven't been fans since with Joe Carter.
Well,
so
the guy who
you got to retrain yourself.
Yeah, the guy who was at that game, probably the last game he was at, also threw something on the field because it was last year's playoff games.
It's pretty crazy now. If you do anything, like, there's a giant witch hunt after you. Don't act like you're not going to be on camera somewhere. You will be on camera. Oh. I don't care where you are or who you are. They will find you.
There was video footage on Twitter like four or five minutes after that happened. It was amazing. Yeah.
You can't do anything bad anymore because you're going to get caught. There's just no hiding.
And
it's crazy.
Toronto just rolled through Texas. I was actually thought Texas was going to win. They had the best record in the AL. What, they win 95 games and they get absolutely trounced.
Hamels got lit up. I mean, this is a guy who's pitched well.
Yeah, Hamels and Darvish both got crushed. And that Toronto lineup, when it's going well, the middle of that order is just deadly.
Yeah.
And Encarnacion is on fire, and he's a free agent. Couldn't have come at a better time for him. I was looking up some numbers on Encarnacion. Since 2012, he's like top five in every power category in the league. Home runs, RBIs, OPS, slugging percentage. I mean, kind of quietly is one of the best power hitters in the league.
Yeah, on all the, I want to say it was Francesa when he had Ron Darling on, and he also had Joe Girardi talking about the playoffs in general and talking about this Toronto series. And both of those guys said the one guy you really need to watch out for, it's not Batista, it's not Donaldson, it's Encarnacion. He's the one who's going to get you, and got him.
And like, you know how sometimes you look at the stats for players in Toronto and at home, they're like lighting it up. They have twice as many home runs because maybe there's something fishy going on there with the roof open, or if they're relaying signs. But he's got pretty much equal stats on the road, so he's pretty legit.
Yeah, he's gonna get a boatload of money.
It's the only like thing said, is good, he's good a little bit older. He's a little bit older, just like Bautista's a little bit older. But yeah, I mean, there's rumors that the Red Sox are interested in Encarnacion as being their DH, and it would just be going from one Yankee killer to the next if they go from Ortiz to Encarnacion. And speaking of Ortiz, I am praying. I believe the Red Sox are down 2-0 in the game and 2-0 in the series right now, but I am praying that we are currently watching Ortiz's last ever baseball game.
Yeah, so I turned it off when we started. They're down, or they're up 2-0, or the Indians are?
Indians, that, last I saw, were up 2-0.
Nice.
Buchholz just gave up a single, RBI single. I forget who hit it. But
that means Andrew Miller's coming in for a couple innings.
Dude, I mean, that was great how Francona used him in the first game. Brings him in the fifth inning.
Yeah.
I mean, Girardi would never do something like that. Miller went over to Cleveland and told Terry Francona, use me like a Swiss Army knife. I will pitch whenever. And instead of just being his closer, he used him. He never used him as early as the fifth inning, but he did use him in the sixth inning a few times this year. And he kind of just puts out fires wherever it's needed. Sometimes the game is most critical in the fifth or sixth inning. And come the ninth inning, you don't need your closer. So it's kind of genius how Francona has used Andrew Miller, and it's working out so far. I just wish that Girardi would be a little bit more open to something like that.
Well, that's the thing. The two managers are completely different, polarizing opposite styles in managing. Francona's definitely more of the you know, how you feel type. How's the guy feel? Like he'll let a guy ride for another inning if he says he's okay, or he'll come in and bring use Miller in the fifth or sixth inning just to get out of a situation. He's definitely more of a player manager, I think, and has the trust of those guys and allows them a longer leash and gives them some say. And he's definitely more open to things. Whereas Girardi, you know, he's got a binder, and if it's in the binder, that's what's happening. But he's very cut and dry.
But I actually think that Girardi, being so stats oriented, would like something like using Andrew Miller in the most high leverage part of the game.
But the binder doesn't have any stats using Andrew Miller or a closer.
I'm starting to believe
he doesn't even know what that looks
like. It's just a picture book, and there's not actually any stats in there. the whole thing with sabermetrics is that sometimes the fifth inning has higher leverage than the ninth inning, so you use your best guy when the game is at its turning point. And for game one of that division series, Boston-Cleveland, it was in the fifth inning when the Red Sox were coming back, and Andrew Miller, I believe, got the middle of that order out and then pitched another two innings. That was when the game could have turned, and Francona didn't let it. If put the Yankees in that situation and your starter is struggling in the fifth inning and you could go to your best guys in the bullpen, but more likely Girardi would go to a guy like Blyer or Swarzak or somebody who's terrible, because it's the fifth inning and it's not the seventh or the eighth inning. That's the only reason he would do it, but he would do it. I mean, maybe you'd see Adam Warren there, but Adam Warren's
Adam Warren there.
But,
yeah, you're right.
I mean, Adam Warren is 50% of Andrew Miller.
Yeah, well, the numbers don't say that at the end of the year. I mean, what was the name I had for them? I don't even remember what the hell it was, but it was
runs. DMC.
Yeah, it was Clip and the
T Clip and the Beast.
T Clip and the Beast. Yeah. So I mean, the fact is that those guys had the very similar numbers does not do justice what those guys did beforehand or who they are. But yes, you're right. I mean, he would use Adam Warren, or he would use Blyer. He would go with a middle relief guy at that point. And yeah, I like it. I think it's something that people got to open their eyes to. I think it's different, and it's not something it's done all the time. So who knows? Maybe this is the new shifting. Maybe this is something that's a trend, a hot new trend that Francona's starting, and it's going to be something that's going to be implemented into the season next year. Girardi does like his trends. I mean, he started shifting after Homeboy started doing it in Tampa Bay. So there were a lot of adjustments that way. But it's usually the next year after a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah, and even when Girardi had the big three in the bullpen at the beginning of the year, he was still pretty regimented in his seventh, eighth, ninth inning. And I was calling for times when it would be Miller or Betances in the fifth inning because the Yankees, you know, whoever it was, Evaldi was at 105 pitches and coming out with a one out in the fifth inning. And instead of going to a mediocre reliever like whoever, he should have gone to Betances, and it just didn't happen, and maybe would have saved the game, and in the long run can save your season. So Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll start seeing that trend go throughout baseball. It kind of puts pressure on the opposing team in the playoffs because you got Andrew Miller looming at any point in the game.
Yeah, no, it's totally, it's absolutely, I mean, you think about it more and more. I mean, when you have an opportunity for the for your best pitcher to come and meet the heart of the lineup on the third time around, if that's the case, if your starter is struggling at that point, I mean, you're buying yourself another two innings at that point, and who knows what you're going to do offensively. There's just a lot of things that can happen in that. It's interesting. I mean, with the amount of, you know, specialized, it's just increasing more, the amount of specialized relievers we're having in the bigs. I mean, I could absolutely see this happening more often.
And last thing about this is that it just further expands all of Yankee fans' love for Andrew Miller. I mean, the dude is an absolute animal. He'll do whatever it takes for the team. He did not bitch when Chapman came in. He gladly took the eighth inning role. He didn't demand the closer role when he went to Cleveland like Jonathan Papelbon did when he went to Washington. He just wants to win, and that is the best trait in players.
Yep. I appreciate it. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, hell yeah. All right, that's the last we'll touch on in the playoffs. Again, like I said, hopefully this is David Ortiz going away party tonight. But Cashman did his State of the Yankees press conference, which he does at the end of every year. The last few years, it's come a lot earlier than normal. But I just want to talk about a few takeaways from this. I thought it was kind of funny that he said the offense and middle relief pitching are the biggest needs on this team. It's like, thank you, Captain Obvious, for stating what we all know if you just watched a little bit of this team this year. But middle relief is one of those things where, isn't it the weakness on every team?
Well, see, that's the thing where he said the biggest need was a middle relief. I mean, the middle relief isn't as much of a need if you have better starting pitching. So it's kind of a little of both. But yes, usually middle relief is, you know, filled with one or two, you know, journeyman guys who have been on like 30 teams, and then a bunch of young dudes, and then you have your big boys at the end, and you have your starting pitchers, and you have guys to get the ball from one to the other. Yeah. So I wouldn't really put it on as a need for the offseason because it kind of just happens.
Yeah, if you were a shutdown fifth inning guy, you wouldn't be a fifth inning guy.
Right.
You would move into a more important role. But as far as offense goes, I think that we saw the offense pick up towards the end of the year. They still need to make additions, I think, but with the fact that Sanchez will be in the lineup from day one, and I think if Girardi focuses all of his good hitters at the top of the order, like Didi and Castro and Judge and Bird, then this offense will be more consistent.
There's definitely a lot more guys now that can hit the ball. That, I mean, you know, I'm a big average guy. I think it's a lost stat that needs to be back in play because it's such an important, to me, it's such an important stat in today's baseball because the other important stat that everybody is pressing on, it's such a hot thing, is the home runs and strikeouts. Strikeouts are acceptable because the home run ball comes behind it. But you need guys on base for that to happen. You need guys to hit for average around those guys that you're going to be accept the strikeout. So yes, I think when you look at the young guys, I think there's a lot more contact in some of these outfielders that we're bringing in, with Sanchez obviously hit for average this year, and hopefully he can continue that. I definitely see him dipping in average. But, you know, I think 280, 285 is probably more of what I'm going to expect from him long term. And then Bird, I mean, Bird hits for a decent average too. So these guys all can make contact, and I think that's definitely a plus, especially for consistency.
Yeah, there's going to be some competitions as well for some of these guys. Austin, I think, was a lot more consistent at the end of the year. He'll be in the running for, I believe, first base along with Bird, Cashman said. And then you kind of got a jumble of guys, Judge, Hicks, and Refsnyder out in right field all competing for a spot. Although I see Refsnyder and Austin really as that fighting for that platoon guy where he could play the outfield and he can also play first base.
No, there's no doubt about it. And you know what? Like, Hicks is the guy that he's exactly the opposite of the guy that I kind of want. He doesn't hit for much power. He doesn't hit for average. He has 105-mile-an-hour cannon from right field, but that's all you're getting from that guy. I mean, I know he came on and played a little better at the end of the year, But unless I see something in spring training, I don't know how you move forward with a guy like that with the amount of outfielders, because you got to throw Mason Williams into the mix now too. He's a guy that played very well at the end of the year, who's been a prospect for a long time, a top guy in the Yankee system, and he's shown now that he's healthy, he can hit, and he's, you know, a plus athlete. I don't even know if I mentioned this the last time, but I heard someone was talking about that Mason Williams was the fastest guy in the Yankee organization. I was very surprised when I heard that. I didn't know that.
That sounds like one of those things where they were saying, if Aroldis Chapman were a position player, he'd steal 80 bases. It's like, well, why isn't that materialized for Mason?
Well, I mean, he's been hurt for so long. I don't even remember seeing him play for such a long time. I forgot about Mason Williams. That's how hurt he was. But the fact is, he's played himself back into a conversation.
Yes. Yeah. With the last couple weeks of baseball. And didn't you hear about Aaron Hicks that he hits right-handed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He hits left-handed pitching.
That was the big rumor.
We were told that all year, even to like the last day of the season, that Aaron Hicks is a good right-handed hitter.
That's why he's there. Yeah. No, that's why he was there. to counter all the lefties.
Cashman was asked about Betances, and that was a big point for us the last few weeks of the season. Is Betances going to be the closer next year? I'm not surprised by his answer. He said, we view Betances as a closer, and I think they'll be fine if he is the closer next year, but he's not ruling out the possibility of signing another free agent closer. I'm assuming, reading between the lines, he's talking about Chapman, because I don't know if you'd really go big money on any of the other guys like Mark Melanson or anyone like that.
Well, the only other guy that is the Dodgers closer, Jansen, he's a free agent as well, I believe. So he's another big name guy that's had a lot of success. So those would be the two guys, but yeah, it's Chapman's the obvious guy. I mean, there's already been rumors, and you know, he's tweeted, what was it, his Twitter picture that he changed? It was in a Yankee, or he tweeted something in a Yankee uniform recently. He's been talking about it. I mean, that's the obvious guy that they're going to be going after. And you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I kind of want it to happen, more than I used to. I'm leaning towards
that.
You
let those last few hiccups by Betances get to you.
Yeah, I did. Well, I've realized that when you have a lot of youth and a little, there's still uncertainty, but we have a lot of youth coming in, and I think our offense is going to be better. I think now is even, you know, going to be a better time when we have a good end of the bullpen, because we'll actually have some leads.
So you think the first half of next year, you'll wish we had the big three bullpen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That would be, yeah. Close BMC would be awesome next year.
Right. And I'm sure that everyone will be saying that, even though the young people wouldn't be possible if they didn't trade.
This is all true. I'm not complaining about
that.
Chicken
or the egg situation here.
Yes. I'm very happy about what occurred. But yeah, it was a flawed system from the beginning.
He touched on like some other stuff that we've already said. Brian McCann is on this team right now and he has a spot, but he's not ruling out trades. Nothing surprising there. One thing that did kind of catch my eye was that Jack Curry, during the press conference, tweeted that Jorge Mateo has seen some time in center field in the instructional league.
Yeah, and that is interesting, because I think they know that they have a plethora of middle infielders, and they have two guys on the roster currently on the starting team that should be around for a while. I mean, this is the biggest home run duo in Yankees history. That's crazy. When that stat flashed up there, when we realized that it was happening, it was such a shock. But it's true. I mean, I still see Castro going to third base at some point, but there still are a lot of you have a lot of middle infielders in the minor leagues that are high prospects. So Torres, obviously, is the guy we got from the Cubs, is a big guy. And Mateo's got the athleticism, I think, to move around. So I think they want to see what happens.
Yeah,
if
I don't know.
Or trade chip too. Watch out for that.
Yeah. So Mateo's, it's been interesting because they flirted with him at second base, and now they're flirting with him in center field. Kind of just seems like they're shifting him around to see what sticks against the wall. I don't know if I should be happy about this or slightly concerned that they haven't really found a position for him. And it's also a detriment to him. He hasn't played well enough over this past year to warrant being locked into one position.
No, he definitely had a down year. So, when you get out of that shortstop spot and you start moving around, to me, why not? Let's just see where else you can play. because it just adds versatility for you know the club to do either make a move or put him in a different place. It opens up a spot in Trenton because he's still got to make that jump. You know, two more leagues to get to the Bronx, so he's got to have some flexibility, especially with the amount of talent that's in front of him.
Let's hope that him sort of getting a slap on the wrist this year turns his attitude around, like it happened for Gary Sanchez.
Remember, two years ago,
Sanchez in Trenton had an attitude problem, and they kind of had to sit him down and tell him, "You got to get your shit together, or else you're going to be out of here." I mean, Sanchez was signed for relatively big money for an international free agent at like 16 years old, and he probably let that money and stardom get to him, and then he turned it around. Obviously, let's hope Mateo can do that.
Yeah, I mean, people mature when they get older. I can't even imagine having money at 16 years old and people, you know, praising you. That just doesn't even make sense to me. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me at like 19 for that to happen either. But yeah, I mean, it's such a unique situation when you come in. Not only you're coming in at 16 years old, but you're coming in from a different country and everybody is catering to you. And, you know, you're the guy everywhere you go. So, yeah, you got to have some mental toughness there and you got to be humbled enough to grow into that type of spot. I mean, it's a very unique position for anybody to be in.
I remember in the podcast you did about Gleyber Torres, I'm drawing a blank on his name from the Pelicans. Announcer that you interviewed from the Pelicans was talking about how Torres doesn't have an attitude and he's a leader in the clubhouse and he's only 19 years old. And it could be understandable if he did let all that stuff get to his head, but he actually is kind of more like cut from the Derek Jeter cloth where this dude's going to be a leader.
Yeah, Scott Kornberg is the announcer. He definitely had everything positive to say about Torres. And not only that, but like the dude was just a humble, nice guy, very respectful, treat everybody pretty much the same from, you know, the guys in the clubhouse to all the announcers and such. So there's nothing but – he said nothing but positive things about him. But, yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. And maybe – who knows? Maybe Mateo working with Torres for, you know, a season or three – half of a season – had some impact on him. He's like, okay, this guy is light years in front of me maturity wise. I got to step it up. I got to ground myself. I got to, you know, start playing better baseball and stop acting like a jackass.
So final thing from that press conference that was a takeaway for me was that new contracts have not been extended to Girardi or Cashman. They're both up at the end of 2017. I think that if I had to project, they both get new contracts. But what do you think would have to happen this year for both to not get contracts at the end of next year?
Well, I think that Girardi, this is what we were talking about. This is a big year because I think that Girardi has to show that these guys are you know, gaining the confidence to play in the major leagues and are improving. And I think the Yankee organization, after what they saw in the second half, they think this team can compete next year. And I think they want to see that. I think they want this team to be competitive and right there at the end. Whether that's a statement in their imagination or something that it's a little bit outside the reach. To me, it's their borderline. But I think the Yankees organization sees that, and I think it's more on Girardi than Cashman. I think Cashman this year earned himself another extension for sure.
Yeah, Cashman kind of dug his claws into this team by trading away a lot of the veterans and bringing in new prospects. You almost have to let him see this wave of prospects through.
No doubt.
Unless he decides he doesn't want any more of it. He wants to go to another team. But I think he's been with the Yankees for pretty much his whole career. He wants to leave. I mean, I don't know him, but I think as Steinbrenner ownership, you have to let Cashman see this team through. And if he falls flat on his face, maybe in 2020 you can fire him. But I think it would be doing the organization a disservice to not let him see this group through.
Yeah, I mean, there's been nothing but positive things about Cashman this year. I mean, well, look what he got from the offseason that he had without signing a good free agent. I think they ended up signing one guy. I don't even remember who it was.
No.
At the end of the
year. Zero free agent.
No, there was one at the end. They would sign one guy at the end, and it was a journeyman dude. I forget who it was. But they didn't. All the moves, the major moves were done through trades.
Yeah.
And Cashman was a wizard. In my opinion, he did very, 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 very well. And he flipped this into gold. I mean, I think Castro had a terrific year, and I think that Cashman buying
not terrific, buying very good year.
I thought it was a terrific year. I thought he had a good year, and especially
it
the
to
second
Stephen
half.
Drew?
Yes, I mean, what the? I'm comparing it to every second baseman that we've seen since Robbie.
I think
Robbie Cano.
He had a he had a tremendous second half, but when the Yankees needed him in June and July, he was non-existent, swinging at everything.
Either way, Cashman absolutely did his job, and I thought he did I thought he did one of the best GM jobs over this year that I've seen in a long time.
Cashman, the trading GM, is fantastic.
Yeah, he finds gold everywhere.
Cashman, the free agent GM over the last three seasons, has been terrible.
Yeah, so, but you and I disagree on where that pressure's coming from, I think.
Okay,
we've talked about
this. All I'm saying is that he's the guy, he's the face of it. So you have to, someone needs to be blamed, so I'm blaming Cashman. That's all I can do as a
I guess
fan, is blame Cashman for the contracts he dished out. Now, if it was Steinbrenner or whatever, I know we talked about this in an episode like a month or two back. We don't know. All we know is Brian Cashman gave $153 million to Jacoby Ellsbury, and that was a huge mistake. He gave $85 million to Brian McCann, which was an overpayment. He didn't sign Robinson Cano, which you can agree with as long as you don't then go out and sign 7 years to Jacoby Ellsbury. So there's just a lot of things that don't add up in my brain with Brian Cashman's free agent stuff. But as far as his trades go, getting Chapman for nothing, flipping him for a high-level prospect, getting Castro for Adam Warren, and then getting Adam Warren back is ridiculous. I mean, even a number of the smaller
and Brendan Ryan. Hold on, we gave up Brendan Ryan too.
I forgot that was a nice mustache. He had a good.
Don't
mustache.
Dismiss the mustache.
But what I'm saying is, if it's like if you could just get rid of that Jacoby Ellsbury contract, this team would be in such a different place right now. And it's like he blacked out. Cashman blacked out. He got drunk one night and just called up agent Boris and was like, "Yeah, let's give him everything, whatever you want, blank check."
But isn't that exactly the list you just rattled off of the trades and then that one free agent signing? There's just something that doesn't make sense there.
I know.
Because they're such different players, like where he's getting people at a point where they're not at their highest market. They're, you know, there's a little bit of something going on there. Whereas Ellsbury was at the very, very top of his market. You know, he's not going to get signed for anything less. It's just it doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem like it's the same guy making those moves, in my opinion. That's why I believe there was pressure there.
I still hold true to the fact that it was a reactionary. He had money to spend. He had a checkbook burning in his pocket. Steinbrenner told him, "You have X number of dollars to put into this team in the offseason." And as soon as Robinson Cano signed in Seattle, he had to give that money to somebody else. And he gave it to the quote-unquote best player on the market, and that was Jacoby Ellsbury.
Maybe.
The Yankees also re-signed Larry Rothschild, so World Series, here we come. You ready to get into some mailbags?
We got some voicemails.
We do. We promised voicemails. We promised voicemails on the last episode. So, Greg, this one's been sitting in our Google Drive for a couple weeks now. So the first one is from Greg.
Hey, guys. Greg, second-time caller. One of the things that I saw kind of writing on the wall when I came to some of the mid-season trades was when they had gotten Gleyber Torres and having Mateo at shortstop as well. I know that they put Mateo at second since then, but I still believe that Torres is a trade chip. I still believe that they're going to go after a top-tier pitcher. And it seems like one of those options would be Chris Sale. And I really do believe that Torres and maybe one of their outfielders, because they're so stacked in the outfield now, would probably be, you know, the two of the top-tier trade chips to get somebody like Chris Sale or another top-tier pitcher. You know, there's questions regarding Sale. Is he, you know, viable in New York? Is there something that he can actually handle? Those are all still up in the air with his attitude and a lot of the issues he has. I'd love to hear some of your guys' opinion on that. Go Yankees.
All right. Thank you, Greg, for the voicemail. He's asking pretty much a question that we've all been asking, and I know was asked in the press conference. Will the Yankees flip some of these prospects for a frontline starting pitcher? He named Chris Sale as an example.
Yeah, so the Chris Sale move, I mean, obviously you're going to have to give probably the biggest bounty for a guy like Chris Sale. I think the scissor gate is in the rearview mirror. I don't think anybody really is putting any like lost value on
that,
the fact.
I'm not putting that in the rearview mirror. That worries me.
I don't think a lot of GMs are. I think that's going to be with the way that the pitching market looks now, nobody cares about that. They will take their chances.
Well, let me ask this question. Does Chris Sale come with Drake LaRoche?
Is that the son?
Yeah.
That I can't answer.
Because
if
Drake LaRoche is going to be making appearances in the Yankee Stadium clubhouse, I agree. Chris Sale, ace, number one pitcher. But without him, I don't know.
So that means Adam LaRoche has to be on the team, and he may quit.
No part of Adam LaRoche. Just his son. Sign his son to a clubhouse contract.
He could be Chris Sale's interpreter.
Yeah, make him a gopher for Chris Sale.
No, I think it's perfect. Chris Sale will just forget how to speak English, and he'll be the interpreter. I think it's a great job. No more interviews. They all go through the kid. That'd be hilarious, actually. But I don't see them going after Chris Sale, just because I think it's going to be such a bounty.
Okay, yeah, let's play the game. Who are we talking about? Who are the White Sox asking for Chris Sale?
Oh, they're asking for your top prospect. So they're probably asking for major leaguers at that point. So they'll ask for Gary Sanchez.
I was going to say they're first going to ask for Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, exactly. They'll get laughed at,
and Cashman will hang up the phone. But then they will say, okay, we want three of like Gleyber Torres, Jorge Mateo, Greg Bird, Aaron Judge, and Rutherford. Like, we get to pick three of those five guys. And if you're the Yankees, you have to really ask yourself, are we going to win in the next 2 to 3 years? If yes, then maybe I can agree bringing in Chris Sale. But if you think that it's still question marks up in the air, which is what I think, I don't think you can give up that kind of depth.
Frazier will also be in the conversation
like
that.
When you
look at the trade for Miller, that one's going to be directly compared to a Chris Sale impact guy. And in fact, probably more value.
So realistically, we're talking about 3 to 4 of the Yankees' top 7 or 8 prospects would have to go to the White Sox.
I want nothing to do with that.
Which is a huge bounty.
I want nothing to do with that. At that point, now I'm thinking about scissors. Now I'm thinking about, okay, so I'm going to trade 4 of my top prospects that I worked my ass off to get for a guy that cut up his jersey and didn't want to play because it was too hot.
Well,
no, I don't want you.
You'd have to be thinking that if that trade has to work out, the Yankees have to win a World Series with Chris Sale, or else it's a huge, huge miss.
You know, with the amount of arm injuries, I've beaten this with like a dead horse, kind of like you and your ace talk. But I just don't trust. I don't trust pitchers now for longevity and to stick around for a while. I mean, I feel like the next arm injury is around the corner, and I'm not just talking about it for a guy who has. A potential injury with Tanaka. I'm talking about for anybody. These guys are falling like they're dropping like flies all over the place, and I just don't trust it. Chris Sale's got some funky deliveries going on. Who knows what's going on in that elbow? And I don't know. What is he, 27? 28? Is he 28? He's up for 20s, right?
He's in the range of Tanaka. And
he's got a lot of innings on that arm.
But what about like a jump down from Chris Sale?
So I'm looking at the guy that I think that they're going to go after, and this is very Cashman-like because he had a down year, is and now, of course, I can't think of his freaking name, from Oakland.
Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray, thank you. That's the guy that I could see Cashman going after.
He had a real down year. He had a horrible year.
Oh, yeah. Cashman's loving every second of that.
What about,
he's going to go after.
What about Quintana from the White Sox? Definitely going to require less than Chris Sale, but... he doesn't have the resume Chris Sale does, and it's kind of annoying because he was once in the Yankee system. I mean, the dude was in every system, kind of like Rich Hill, who we'll get to in a second. But what if going for a guy like Quintana, who is not your quote-unquote number one ace pitcher, but he's a pretty damn good 1A pitcher. You don't need Bumgarner to win in the playoffs.
Right.
It's nice, but you don't need it. But you probably need more than just Masahiro Tanaka to win in the playoffs.
No doubt. I think that level is the guy that they're going to be going after. I think they're going to be going after more of the 2 and 3 guy. And So while Sonny Gray could be a number one, he didn't prove it last year, and I think there's more potential of him being that stud at some point. He's a very good rebound candidate for especially for Cashman. I could see that. I could really see that going down. And I think at that point, you're giving up like a top guy and then some window dressing.
Well, you first say to Billy Bean that you gave the Blue Jays Josh Donaldson, so will you please give us Sonny Gray? And he'll say no. And then he'll probably ask for two of your top 10 prospects, and then do you say yes?
And then he said, and we also have Billy Bean, which I really, or Billy Butler, I really appreciate you paying his contract while he was on. That was fun.
Right. Forgot about that.
And you're still paying him a lot of money. We can give him back to you, although we don't control him. No, I don't know. Yeah, he's going to ask for two. I don't know if he's going to get two, especially after what happened last
year. He'll get two from one team because people will look at last year as the aberration for Sonny Gray, and because it really is if you look at his numbers.
He's another one of those guys that, you know, small in stature.
Who isn't?
I know. But he looks like the... He looks like the guy that's going to get hurt.
With every ace pitcher, other than literally Madison Bumgarner, who is a horse out there. Dude's like 6'5 and jacked from just chopping wood all season. You're scared of all your pitchers. I mean, Clayton
Kershaw
got injured this year.
That's why I have such a hard time trading for these guys with all of your prospects. Yeah, I mean, a very difficult time doing that.
Cashman said it's a risky proposition. But
yeah.
But they're not on the free agent market. You're not touching any of the pitchers on the free agent market, most likely.
Right.
Actually, well, let's talk about one of them. Next voicemail comes from Alex in Arizona.
Hey, guys. This is Alex calling from Northern Arizona. Really enjoyed the show. Really enjoyed listening to you guys and keep up the kids this season. Been reading some of the off-season stories here. It looks like a big rumor is that the Yankees are in for Rich Hill. Not a big fan of another stopgap, old-school, old-guy pitcher. Wonder what your guys' take on it was. Go Yanks.
All right. Thank you, Alex. He's asking about Rich Hill, the soft-tossing, soon-to-be 37-year-old, blister-having Rich Hill. A couple weeks ago, Buster Olney wrote something that the Yankees' top priority in the offseason should be Rich Hill, that he's going to be looking for like a 2 to 3 year contract, and it would be perfect for the Yankees because it's not a long-term commitment, but he would instantly shoot to the top of their rotation along with Tanaka as a 1 and 2, somewhere in that range. And I mean, the numbers on Hill over the last year and a half are ridiculous, but I mean, the dude is going to be 37 years old, and he didn't really have that great of a start in game two of the playoffs. So I just think Rich Hill is like, if we're going to be counting on Rich Hill, 37-year-old Rich Hill next year, that worries me.
Yeah, where's Hiroki Kuroda when you need him? I mean, this is a guy that I would rather bring back on a one-year deal.
Still pitching
I don't know.
In Japan.
Yeah, I know, and he would probably be effective. I agree. I agree with Alex. I'm not on board with the guy that's just going to be, you know, a quick fix or quote fix. I mean, if he even is that, he's getting blisters. Does that mean he has soft skin and just can't handle the longevity of a season? Like, it's weird. It's weird that you're still getting blisters and you don't have like calluses. I gotta believe all these guys have like ridiculous calluses on their hands, but. I don't know. He's not a guy I want. I don't want him on my team because we have everybody who's young. I'm not bringing a 37-year-old pitcher.
Talking about blisters.
That's the bottom damn line. Yeah. I don't want a freaking guy who gets blisters who's 37 years old. I'm almost 37. If I get a blister from working in the yard, that's one thing. But a professional pitcher getting blisters, and that's what you do, I want nothing to do with you.
He throws.
No, I don't want him.
He throws like
him.
The highest percentage of curveballs anyone's thrown in the history of baseball. It's ridiculous. And he throws them overhand, three-quarters, side-armed. All he does is throw curveballs. I was at a wedding in D.C. this weekend, and on Sunday afternoon, I was at a bar for that game, Game 2 of the Nationals-Dodgers series. And this was in the first couple innings where Rich Hill was striking everyone out. And there was a dude at the bar who was a Nats fan, just livid. Hit the freaking curveball! Sit on the curveball! It was hilarious to watch. It made me jealous that I'm not as pumped up for postseason baseball because the Yankees aren't in it. But at the same time, we're talking about a guy who is just throwing junk up there. And that sometimes does not play in crunch time. It does not play in the postseason.
No, I mean, there's so many guys now that have a hard time with the off speed pitches. It seems like more and more these guys are just groomed to hit the fastball. But when you have a guy like that who can change position, change speeds, throw from different arm angles, like you're talking about the 30 different curveballs and paint, then you're going to have a difficult time with him. So I have no other reason besides the fact that I just don't want him, because I don't want another old guy coming in and with like relatively high expectations and then getting blisters or getting hurt because he's 37 years old. It doesn't make sense. Baseline, not for this team.
This is just my opinion. I have not read this anywhere, but I think baseline contract for Rich Hill is going to be what R.A. Dickey got as an extension a couple years ago. 2 years, $25 million. I think that's going to be baseline. I think he's going to get more like 2 years, $30 to $35 million. So it's a lot of money for a guy who could just miss half the season.
I want nothing to do with that. I like the trade route for a 2-3 guy. You can kind of pick and choose who you want a little bit more. You're not getting forced into what this free agent class is giving you. I think that's the biggest thing. When GMs get forced into a free agent class and they have no other options, start signing. Yeah, and that's when you see these Rich Hill guys getting, like you said, 2 years, $30 million. It's ridiculous. And that's not the position that we're in right now. We do have assets. We do have a lot of assets that can be turned into something more usable that fits this team currently. And that's what I think Cashman should do.
I would rather see them, like you said, go for a 3-5 guy in the rotation and then see where this team is in June and July. If this team has a real shot to go deep in the playoffs and then you want to trade for a number one ace, I would be okay with that. But to do it now where you don't know what this young team is going to do, they could come out and fall flat on their face, and then you traded away a lot of your prospects for a number one pitcher, which doesn't really help you in 2017. So I would almost rather wait. I know the price even goes up mid-season, but I think that you can sort of have the luxury of waiting if you're the Yankees right now.
I mean, we saw how much the price went up. The price went up a ridiculous amount with the haul that we got. So it would be kind of ironic if we were to wait at that point and then go after a guy and basically everything happened to us that we were the beneficiaries of this year. So it'll be interesting, but if the Yankees are in a position, I would definitely not put it past them to make a big splash midseason.
All right, let's go to the next voicemail. This one is from Scott in Ottawa. We got a listener north of the border, and he's a first time, long time.
Hey guys, Scott in Ottawa here. First time, long time. Just want to thank you guys for another great season of podcasts, and congratulations on your next episode, which is number 100. You guys are the best. My question is, what is your all-time favorite New York Yankee free agent pickup? All right, guys, you told me to keep it short, so I will. And pretty sure I don't even know my international rate because I'm in Canada. So I'll just hang up now. Go Yankees.
Gotta love the first time, long times. I appreciate Scott, who is my we've definitely talked to Scott before. He's sent in some mailbags before, and I've talked to you on Twitter occasionally too. But you are the first time long time. I didn't even know that was a thing for us until you said it, and it made us happy.
I believe it might just be you doing a Canadian accent.
Maybe.
Bizarro Scott.
Bizarro Scott in Canada, yeah.
He asks, this is more of a question about looking back on the history of the Yankees. He asks our all-time favorite free agent pickup. Who are you going with?
All right, so I'm cheating a little bit, but this is a guy that was a free agent technically, but El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, still one of my all-time favorite Yankees. Love watching the guy pitch. Probably one of the top pitchers that I could watch just pitch every day. He was so awesome to watch. Just paint the corners with a different. I mean, I guess kind of like Rich Hill, where he would change
nothing like Rich Hill.
I know, but he would change speeds. He would change arm angles. He would paint the corners. He had that Eefus pitch that would just make people look stupid. He was a big game pitcher. He was awesome, and that was probably my one of my favorite Yankees. And I'll have to go with, as I look back, my favorite free agent signing.
It's funny because you look back at the free agent signings and most of them came after 2001 with the Giambi and Mike Messina signings, and those guys didn't win World Series. So it's you have bittersweet memories about them. I mean, I love Messina. When he didn't get that perfect game at Fenway Park, and I believe it was 2002, and freaking Carl Everett got that hit off of him, I was so angry. I hated Carl Everett. So obviously Messina's up there, but he didn't win, so it's hard to put a guy who didn't win on your all-time list. So It's tough. I'm trying to think, but I did enjoy Johnny Damon signing, and I know you're not going to like that.
Ugh.
And the reason I liked it is
over Tino.
Tino was not a free agent signing. They traded for Tino.
You're right. They did trade for Tino. I forgot about that whole thing.
But Johnny Damon, because they took him away from the Red Sox, and he did win a World Series. I'll never forget him stealing that base in Game 4 of the World Series in Philly, and then going first to third on that stolen base.
Look, Johnny Damon had his moments, and I appreciated what he did as a Yankee. It was just very difficult. I hated him so much that it was very difficult to get rid of that hatred. And, you know, when you make such an abrupt change from the guy that you hate to a guy that you're supposed to like and root for, it's very hard. And it was like the height of emotions, and I drank a lot at that time. It was just I was very stuck in my ways at that point. And Johnny Damon, I think, came into my life at a very difficult position where I just couldn't root for him.
The Yankees, I just realized, are on kind of a trajectory where they just sign Red Sox ex-center fielders. Johnny Damon, then Jacoby Ellsbury. So, like, 2020, they're going to be signing Jackie Bradley Jr. to a ridiculous contract.
Nice.
All right, guys, thank you for the voicemails. We got three of them this week. Let's keep it going in the off season. I think it's just, you know, better than us trying to read out loud, which is what we're going to do right now. This first one comes from Brian Lujan. He says, hey, guys, I was just wondering what offseason moves, if any, you think we should make for next year. Trade Gardner, sign some rotation help, re-sign Cash Chapman. I also was wondering what team you two will be rooting for in the playoffs. We touched on a lot of that stuff already. First, let's answer the playoff question, and then let's talk about trading Gardner. Who's your team in the playoffs?
I guess I want to see a Cleveland-Chicago World Series.
I, in the American League, am rooting for not the Red Sox. And in the National League, I am rooting for the Giants, even though it looks like they are going to go down to the Cubs. I just kind of like the fact that the Cubs haven't won in 108 years. I think it's funny.
It is kind of funny. I think it's been a long... I don't hate them, so I think at some point
I have no hatred for the Cubs, but... Don't you think it'll take away? It's kind of one of those fun baseball things where there's a team that hasn't won since many, many people were born and died. 108 years, more than a lifetime, they have not won a World Series. I think it's just one of those weird baseball things that's kind of fun.
I mean, it was the same thing with the Red Sox when they hadn't won. I mean, it was a long, long, long time. And yeah, we saw what happened to them. They got cocky and now they're a nuisance. It was a lot more fun. Well, and I hated them, so it was even more fun because all of their fans were miserable, and it was at the peak of the Yankees in my lifetime. So it was tremendous. But I don't have the same feeling for Chicago. I just feel bad for them sometimes. So I kind of want them to win. And I think it's a fun city. I got nothing against the people in Chicago. I want them to see a winner.
I wouldn't be upset if they win. But yeah. You know. All right, trading Gardner.
You have to do it.
They're going
to do it,
even if you get 50 cents on the dollar.
Yes. He doesn't have a spot on this team next year. There's too many outfielders.
I think he's still a better option than Aaron Hicks.
Maybe.
Come on.
Yeah, oh yeah, Aaron Hicks. That wasn't fair. That was unfair what you just did. But is he a better option than Ref Snyder or is he a better option than you know, Mason Williams coming up, or is he a better I don't know. Yes. I would rather
see
a young guy.
He's a better player than those guys. I'm not saying I'd be upset
at this moment right now, but I just don't see him on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be upset if Gardner is traded, but what I'm saying is he's a better left fielder than Rob Ref Snyder and Mason Williams. I mean, it's not anything against those guys. I mean, Gardner's not a bad player.
I agree. I think at this point they have, you know, with everything that is coming up and their plans being on the very forefront of everything, getting the young guys the playing time, I think it's just time to part ways. And
yeah.
And I think there's going to be a lot of teams. And I think, you know, you're talking about 50 cents on the dollar, but I actually think there'll be competition for Brett Gardner because he is that type of player. And maybe you could jockey. You're not going to get
down
a
year.
Lot.
He had a down year.
You're not going to get a lot for him.
No, but it's kind of one of those things where the biggest benefit is almost the fact that it opens up spots for other people. You're not moving Jacoby Ellsbury. It's just an immovable contract. So if you can move Gardner to free up some space, and then maybe even start transitioning Ellsbury over to left field, because I think he's probably a better left fielder than center fielder at this point, especially with his arm, then that's kind of addition by subtraction.
Well, and you know, the way that we were talking about Gardner getting moved at the trade deadline too is, I think, a very solid option for the offseason, where he's thrown into a package as the major league guy who's ready to contribute right now. So that's a very big option, I think, if they are going to go after some kind of a pitcher, you know, adding a whole bunch of prospects and then cherry on top, oh, we'll give you a left fielder. I can see that happening as well.
All right. Thank you for the mailbag. That one was from Brian. So what do we have up next?
Next one is from Greg. He said, prospects can quickly become suspects. Why not sell high now? Tell the Angels that they could pick any three prospects within reason. If you take Torres, you can't have Frazier. From our system for Mike Trout. The Angels are garbage. They need to rebuild, and they don't want to pay Trout while they're rebuilding. Bring Trout home and shift Ellsbury to left. Deal Gardner. What are your thoughts?
The Yankees would literally have to trade their top 15 prospects to get Mike Trout.
Do we have top 15? Is that a thing? I guess it is, but you have to give up a lot.
Remember how ridiculous we just said the bounty would be for Chris Sale? Times that by 1,000, and that's what you get for Mike Trout. I mean, he is without question the best player in the game today, and he might be the best player in the game ever when it's all said and done.
Yeah, he does have a big contract, so that might be something.
Yeah, and the Angels don't care about money. They're still paying Josh Hamilton.
That's true. Yeah, they paid him a lot of money for nothing.
Right. They don't care about money, especially when he's an MVP candidate every year, and he's 24 years old.
It's an absolute valid point. Yeah, he's very young still. That's the thing that people, I think, forget sometimes, just because he's been around for so long. He's so young. He's, what, 24, you said?
Yeah.
He's a young dude. So, yeah, we'd have to give up a ton. I think that so is Aaron Judge older than Mike Trout?
Be.
Yeah, they're close, right? So, yeah, the Yankees would have to give up a ton. I just don't see it happening.
Mike Trout is 25 years old, so he's 25. A year older than Judge. But still, I mean, he's been in the league for 5 years. This is honestly what you'd be trading for Mike Trout. It would be Gary Sanchez would be the center. You'd probably have to give up another 4 of your top 10 prospects with Gary Sanchez in the deal.
Yeah, because they got nothing to lose.
Right. And then they would say to themselves, okay, we can build around Gary Sanchez and this other core group of players. But I honestly think that's what it would take.
Yeah, not worth it.
And it still even might be worth it for a team. But,
maybe.
But I just don't think.
Not for right now, though. I mean, we're not one player. We're not a guy like that away, I don't think. Our pitching staff is nowhere near ready to, unless there were major moves around this also.
I just don't see
it happening. It's too big of a move. It's too big of a move.
What I'm saying is that I think it would actually be a move that would work out for the team getting Trout, even if you trade away all of your good prospects, because Trout is that good.
Again, they'd have to be in a position ready to go, though.
Not even, like we just said, he's 25 years old. They have another 7 years of his prime.
Yeah, but you're purging your minor leagues. So who's going to be coming up when all of your prospects are now gone? You'd have to build through free agency, and we know how well that works.
Yeah, it's just Mike Trout.
I get it.
Another rumor that I saw, we posted, and I saw it really start from a Pittsburgh beat reporter, was that the Pirates might be looking to trade Andrew McCutchen. And I remember you laughed at me when I suggested this back in July. But first of all,
remind me why I laughed at you. I don't remember the whole scenario.
I don't know. I think it was because you just didn't think that they would be trading their franchise player. But
yeah.
He's an aging franchise player who is up at the end of next year. I know he has an option for 2018, and the Pirates are kind of spiraling down. They had their shot, and now it looks like the Cubs are going to be running that division for the foreseeable future, and the Pirates are kind of just hovering. They're not getting any better.
But they got Ivan Nova, though, so they did their starting rotation solid.
He's a free agent.
But yeah, they are a team that's in a very strange position because the Cubs are so dominant and so good, and they will be for a long time. They're in a unique situation. McCutchen scares me a little bit. I love the player. I really do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Andrew McCutchen, I know he had a down year this year, But he's just that type of guy. He's a winner. He feels like a winner. He's a good dude. He's a plus defender, plus bat. He's a great guy to have
on
your team.
He's not really that great at anything. He's just good at a lot of
stuff.
That's
what I say. He's plus plus. Yeah, he's a plus guy.
Like, McCutchen is one of those guys over the last 5 years that I've known about because he's a good player and he was always Pittsburgh's best player. But you were never like, oh shit, Andrew McCutchen is coming to the plate right now.
I just don't think, I mean, you're still going to have to give up a ton of prospects for this guy. And
I don't think.
What is he? He's 30 years old?
You're going to have to give up, I think he's 29. You're going to have to give up a decent amount of prospects. But he's locked up for 17 at $14 million and then 18 for an option for 14.75. I mean, I think that it's kind of like you said with.
The money's okay.
You said with Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray?
Yeah, you're buying low on him because he had a really, really bad year this year. Dreadfully bad this year.
Yeah, I'm looking up his numbers to see how bad it really was.
Really bad. You're going to be like, oh, wow.
256, 80 RBIs, 25 home runs. That's like he would be the best player on the Yankees this year.
I know you don't like this kind of stuff, but he actually gave up the most runs defensively out of any center fielder in the league this year.
All right, well, don't put him in center field. Those numbers aren't, if those are your worst numbers ever, because every year before that, I'm looking, he's at 290, 300. He's actually never had 100 RBIs. That's surprising. But he's a 20 home run guy, 20 to 25 home run guy. He's a
really good player.
Really good player. You're seeing a lot of this type of player, though. The only difference to me is the average. He's hitting for average. And the Yankees do need a guy like that. I don't know. It depends on what they're asking, I guess. That's the biggest thing. I would love to see him on the team because I think he's a great. He would be a perfect veteran to mix in with these guys to take them to the promised land.
You'd have to, I think. Obviously, you'd have to trade either Gardner or Ellsbury at that point, but you'd almost have to give those guys away just to clear spot.
Fine. Okay. Done.
I'm just saying it's a lot. Done. I'm not even saying that you have. It's like. It's hard. It's gonna be hard to do.
No, it's not an easy move. I think all the moves that we've talked about so far are complex because you're giving up a lot of minor leaguers. I don't think the major league guys are the ones that you're talking about, like ditching contracts too. I don't think the Yankees have as much of a problem with that as we think they do. I could see them ditching a guy, maybe not Ellsbury this year, but next year I could see it. I could see them walking away from Headley this year. I could see that as a true option
and eating that money.
And eating
that
money,
I still think they want to get under that luxury tax. And if they bring in a $15 million player like Andrew McCutchen, that means someone needs to go off the roster who's making around $15 million, whether that's Brett Gardner or Chase Headley or half of Jacoby Ellsbury, whatever it is.
Well, how does it work, though, if they just get rid of them and they're still paying them? They're still that doesn't hit the tax?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So what's the difference if they're not going to get anybody to eat that money?
So then they're not going to bring in more salary.
So you're saying that, I mean, my point is that even if you get rid of those guys, the salary doesn't go away. So
you'd have
you're saying that it doesn't happen.
And I'm saying it only happens if they can find a team to trade either Brian McCann, Chase Headley,
and take the money,
Jacoby Ellsbury, or Brett Gardner, and take around the same money that they'd be bringing in a guy like Andrew McCutchen for.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, it's complex. I agree with you that they want to be under the
cap. I agree. This is the time to get under the luxury tax because you're in a rebuilding, retooling mode. Get under that luxury tax. It resets, and then come the big, huge free agents when Machado and Harper and all those guys are free agents. Go nuts.
I think that's exactly what's going down. I just have a difficult time seeing that money get taken. That's going to be the hard part is take it. Getting rid of them and getting enough money back in return from some of these guys, the Headleys or the Ellsbury. I think Ellsbury's off the table this year, and then being able to still stay under it. It's going to be that we need a capologist.
I don't think those exist in baseball because it is really no cap. All right. Thanks everyone for the mailbag questions and voicemails. Keep them coming. You can submit at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. The voicemail line is 646-480-0342. Tweet us at Yankees Podcast, at Andrew_Rotondi, and at Scott Reinen. Scott, I don't know what's going on in the Red Sox game. I'm going to turn it on right now, and I'm going to be really happy if they're getting crushed. But while I do that, do you have any last words?
4-2 is the last time I saw it. Yeah, I do. Next week is going to be our 100th episode, and that's a big deal. I've had just so much fun over the past 2 years doing this show, and the fact that we've done now next week will be 100 shows is crazy. We have a lot of guys who participate on Twitter and talk to us, send in mailbags. Really appreciate all of you guys. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't anybody listening. We know you're listening. We see the numbers. We see the all the interaction coming in. We'd love some comments or thoughts or anything that you got for our next show. It's going to be a special show, 100. Send in some voicemails for us, 30 seconds. Give us your hot take. And let's kick off the next century with a bang. I'm pumped up for it. It's going to be a big episode.
That's great. And yeah, and even in one of those voicemails, I believe it was Scott in Ottawa mentioned that it's our 100th episode. If you guys are listening and you've been listening to us, whether it's a week, 10 weeks, 50 weeks, or 100 weeks, I wonder if there's anyone out there that has actually listened to all 100. That'd be pretty sweet. Give us a rating and review in iTunes. Like, that legit does help us a ton. Because if we get 5-star ratings and comments, then we shoot up the boards in iTunes and all the places you can get podcasts. And the more this grows, the more content and the better guests and all that kind of stuff that we can give you guys. And that's obviously what we're aiming for. So everything Scott said about 100 episodes, it's crazy that it went by that fast. And definitely thank all the listeners. So next time we talk to you, it'll be number 100. Have a good week, everyone.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.